Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve bring you high-level sports analysis and stories as two dads raising kids. Plus, find out every Tuesday what they hate. See if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumike, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Adrian Wojnarowski, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for watching on YouTube and thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We're going to talk to NFL playoffs on this episode. And it is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Nothing much. You got me Googling most expensive liquors now. It's outrageous. These prices. They selling them for over $1 million. There's something out there that you got to pay $3.5 million, some sort of tequila. It's outrageous.
Nah, there's a whole world of expensiveness on stuff that really just comes down to, do you got it like that? Right? So, like, exactly. I went and got, I'll throw some numbers out here just to give people some perspective, right?
Oh, gosh.
So, I decided to treat myself to a fancy stereo system a few months ago, right? So I went and I got crazy speakers, an expensive record player, and we'll get to that expensive record player part in a second. Went and did it. Like, my brother's come over here. He said I've completely ruined sound at his house, right? Like, he thought he was doing it. You know what I'm saying? He came over here and he understood that something else is cracking. Now, in sum total, I think I spent something like 12 G's on it. Like, the speakers, I want to say, were like 7. I want to say the amp was like 2. The turntable was like 3. Like, you know, I want to say it was something in that range. Okay. I'm not telling you the number to flex. I'm telling you so that you understand and have perspective when I go to the hi-fi store and I talk to my man Andrew, who treated me very well when others had not. And I go in and Andrew tells me that he had just sent off an $18,000 cartridge for somebody's record player. Cartridge. And if you don't know, the cartridge is at the head of the record player. It has the needle. It's what takes the sound out of the record and then sends it to the rest of the system, right? Okay. So you hear me saying I spent 12 G's on the whole system. You're like, damn, this dude put 12 G's on the cartridge. And like, I don't even know, like, are your ears even good enough to know the difference? You know what I'm saying? And so I asked the dude at the hi-fi store and I'm like, really, is there a difference? And he was honest with me. He was like, there's a difference. It's not that big a difference. It's just a matter of whether or not you got it. And if you got it in such a way that the difference, like my thing about renting cars, I used to get the cheapest rental car on the lot. And then I was like, why am I trying to save $25 and I'm sitting here with my knees in my chest? I was going up a hill in a Nissan Versa in 2013. Like, what am I doing? This doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah.
And that's what they decisions are about stuff like $18,000 cartridges. So Dominique and I would talk about this place that apparently got like liquor you buy about an ounce and it'll be like 12 G's for an ounce. And we just try to figure out how good that ounce could possibly be. And the answer is, if you got to ask, this ain't for you. You know, like, that's really what it comes down to.
And I had to ask, and it wasn't for me. So, and this podcast is a celebratory place, so you don't have to apologize for talking about numbers. This is a place where the people are happy for you when you get good stuff. Like, I surround myself with people that I don't have to be like, hey, look, I'm sorry, I got to do this, but that's not a place where I need to be. I surround myself with people that when I say that I did something nice, they're like, damn, brother. That's good. And that's how I feel about you. You got 10 G's on the system. I can't wait till we beat this COVID and I can come over there and listen to it.
You know what's like kind of funny, though, about that is the other day, we had Joel on, and you know, the weather's been kind of bad up here, and Joel was like, yeah, so you know, you used to send the pictures from your balcony in Miami and all that. He's like, how you feel now? I was like, I still feel like I make a lot of money. Like, look, man, when you up there freezing and that radiator rattling, that's one thing, right? I wasn't just showing you pictures of the sun. I was showing you pictures of the beach, and it was in my backyard. You know what I'm saying? I ain't got the beach in my backyard right now, but I do got an elevator that opened up in my spot.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I'm jealous.
Yeah, let me tell you, it's nice, but the heater in my bedroom ain't working right now. It's one of those situations, right?
The story you talked about your brother, like, that has to be one of the it's one of the best feelings. And I don't know if it's a man thing or what. My wife isn't like that, in that when I get stuff or I do something, like, half the fun is to impress the people I care about. Like, I notice my wife has lots of nice things, but she tends to, like, try to hide what it is from her friends. She wants them to be like, that looks nice, but she don't want them to be like, let me see where that's from. Whereas I'm kind of like, I want you to see it's nice. I can't wait to show you the tag. I can't wait for all this experience. Like, I want you to be like, damn, that was good. If I come over to visit you and I ride, I'm sad that you told me, but I would have liked for you to just tell me, yeah, just come on in. Yeah, press the button. Yeah, the one pH. That moment right there, when it hit me and the elevator opened into your house, I would have been so thrilled. But yeah, thrilled to hear it nonetheless.
Yeah, like, I don't need people to know price, right? But like, for people who really dig music, I want you to come in and be like fully immersed in it. I will say this, though. When I lived at the spot in Miami, I remember when I walked in, not even that unit, right? But like, when I was looking for places in Miami, Dan's mom is a realtor and she was my realtor. She was very kind, and like, she was guiding me to live on the beach, right? Like, she just thought it would be a good idea. And so I went to some spot on 71st Street on the beach, and I definitely didn't want the place. Like, the carpet was kind of ratty, the appliances were old, but when you opened that door, it was right there in front of you. That water was right there in front of you. And I was like, oh, I got to have that. And so I wound up getting a much nicer spot, but a different spot down around 50th Street. And I would just watch people. Like, after a while, I realized what it did to people. And so they would come in, and I'd open the door, and they would try to play it cool, right? It would be, hey, hey. And I started leaving the balcony door open so they could just walk straight out there. Like, it was like a trance. And I loved every minute of that, I have to admit.
The funny thing is, I'm sure there are, like, people who hate to hear about this, but like, even the like middle class to lower class in America, like the way that we're talking about spending money on a stereo system, like the guy who spent 14 grand on a cartridge is looking down at us. And the way that most of like our country lives, like, is looking down on the rest of the world. Like, the idea that you could just go get some fast food and get some clean water. Like, there are more people who struggle with those things. Like, they looking at us the same way that we looking at Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Now, what we are is your homies that came up, right? That's just what it is. And speaking of coming up, just so everybody knows, Friday night, that will be Friday the 21st, January 21st, back on the record with Bob Costas. I believe we air at 11 o'clock on Friday. As you know, I've been a contributor on that show. And on the panel, they need to call that thing the right time, dog. It's going to be Bob with me, Dominique Foxworth, and Howard Bryant. So, like, check that out. It's the right time invasion. Be there. Be square. Cetera.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to tell you this about football, Dominique. This was interesting. So I think I've talked about it all here. As quarantine and all this stuff has hit, the right time has picked up a new listener, my mother. She has been listening. She told me that my other podcast that I do is just a little more racy than she would prefer. And so, you know, I got to do this here in front of these white folks who cut these checks. And so this is a little easier for her 78-year-old sensibilities. And I'm sitting at home on Saturday. I don't know if she sent the text on Saturday or Sunday, but the text said, and I quote, "You said Josh Allen was good, but he's better than good."
What?
Yeah, like, Dominique, if we were still fighting that fight, the fight is over.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I gave up a long time ago.
Dog, he looked like the best player in the NFL on Saturday night.
He was so good that when I was on Get Up on Tuesday, I said that Josh Allen's best is better than Patrick Mahomes' best. The difference is Josh Allen can only do it on occasions, whereas Patrick Mahomes can give you 95 every day of the week. That's the difference. But if you actually think about it, Josh Allen can do everything Patrick Mahomes can do and a little bit more. The problem is sometimes he'll give you that cross body toss.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. My buddy Nick Wright, First Things First on Fox, he has this graph that they love to pull up, and it's a line graph of, like, Josh Allen performances by quarterback rating. And that thing looked like a heart monitor. That thing goes up, down, up, down, up, down. But, man, if you let him sit back there and just give him a little bit of time to make sure everything he's doing is all right, I can't believe this. I stood by everything I said at every point in the Josh Allen journey because it all made sense at those points. But I cannot believe, no one has ever gotten better, period.
Not like that. Not like that. I remember last year before the season started, that was one of the questions that we were using for these shows, was like, who is going to have a Josh Allen-like leap? Not nobody. Like, it's never happened. No one will have a Josh Allen leap because Josh Allen is the only person in the history of modern sports. Like, I can think across sports, unless you are looking at steroids in baseball, ain't nobody got, like, he had a Brady Anderson jump in home runs without touching the stuff. I mean, this is real.
It's bananas what that is. Like, I will tell you, when I started being like, oh, there really might be something to this, is a little earlier on when I look at him, and my thought to myself is, all right, well, this is the guy that a Bill Belichick will feast on. And then I realize he's not feasting on him. Like whatever the weaknesses are, it's not something that you can exactly coach him into. Because my thought had been, because he still got a little panic in him, right? So I'm like, bring some heat, except they was bringing heat. And that dude was just off me, heat no more.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big difference was bringing in Diggs. I think having someone, because his numbers were really bad in man coverage. And, like, man coverage is tough because you got to throw tight windows. Like, normally NFL defensive backs are going to be close enough that thing better be accurate. And Diggs made it so that he didn't have to be so accurate. And I think one of the things that we haven't been able to, like, really pinpoint, but it's not a coincidence that all the best quarterbacks in football started in a good situation. And I think there's something to being able to be allowed to develop on the field under, like, lower pressure or lower stakes. I think that has, I mean, even Patrick Mahomes, who walked in, and Dak Prescott, all of them, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, like, everybody who's really good right now, Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, like, all of these people, they came into good situations. I don't know very many quarterbacks who got dropped into bad situations and are excelling. We'll see what happens with Herbert, because that situation is confusing. I guess you could say Burrow's situation was not a good situation, and he seems to be playing well. But by and large, it feels like you have to be in a situation where you are allowed to grow without putting it all on your back. We saw what happened down in Jacksonville this year. He ain't that bad. Trevor Lawrence ain't that bad.
Well, I would say by that notion, though, Peyton Manning did walk in a good situation, because let's not forget, he walked onto a roster that had two Hall of Famers, and then they traded one of them and drafted another Hall of Famer to replace him, right? Like, Peyton was in a situation where I think he helped make it good because he and Archie put so much pressure on them. You know, Archie Manning was, because Archie Manning, classic case of bad situation, right? Archie was like, this ain't never gonna happen to one of my boys, not once. And a laughingstock organization turned it all around.
Mm-hmm. Odell Beckham Sr. out there caping for his boys. I love it.
Took the bullets. Like, with that thing with Eli, which is still a hilarious thing to look back on, really, because not wanting him to play for the Chargers made total sense at the time. 2 years later, they were the best team in the league. But 1 year after that, the Giants win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Like, in sum total, the Chargers have been better than the Giants over the span of that Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers career. The Giants had those Super Bowls, though, and the Giants, of course, now are just rat ass. Like, I can't, that's just a little bit beyond my ability to comprehend. But, yeah, no, I think situations matter. I also think the problem with this Ricky Wade scale, almost kind of ironically, is since the guys are cheap, there feels like a greater push to actually play them. I've seen no evidence that playing as a rookie helps. Now, to be fair, I don't think I have any evidence that not playing as a rookie helps, necessarily. But throwing them dudes out there, I don't necessarily, like, back in the day, you took your time on this thing. It was a lot harder to get going immediately as a quarterback, but you took your time on this thing. Like, Josh Allen, they threw him out there early, but it wasn't the plan. They were willing to throw the Peterman out there before they put Josh Allen out there. But they were rooting for him so hard that the pressure wasn't necessarily, like, that high. Like, it wasn't like he was under constant evaluation. Like, Peyton Manning had all them interceptions as a rookie, but we knew he was going to be that guy. So it was like, yeah, get it out your system.
It's interesting that the lower price creates the pressure to put him out there sooner than the higher price would, because you would suspect that, but I guess you have more invested, so you're more careful with it. But I would suspect that, like, man, we got all this invested in him. We're going to make sure that we do this right. Whereas in this one, it's like they're quicker to give up on you. So they want to get you out there quickly so that they can find out what they got, and then they can go back to the draft and find the real quarterback if you ain't the one. So,
right.
Yeah, and everything else has sped up too. So, like, it seems like it makes sense because guys are getting training so much earlier. They're getting the NFL style is so much closer to the college style now. So, like, it seems like, yeah, by the time you walk in the league, maybe you aren't ready to start, but we should be able to know whether you are going to be our guy or not within two seasons.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about that with these rookies this year, where basically other than Mac Jones, they all stunk, and Mac Jones really wasn't that good. That was the norm before. Like, Ryan Leaf was terrible as a rookie, but it was like, oh, he's terrible, right? This happens. Peyton Manning wasn't good as a rookie. Like, this was just kind of what the game was. Cam Newton and Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford came in the league and was decent right away, and Cam Newton came in the league and was good right away. And the game had officially been changed.
That was Cam Newton. One of the saddest things in Cam Newton's career was the fact that he couldn't come out a year earlier. Because Cam Newton was the first one to get that check that was smaller, much smaller than the years before. Boy, that had to hurt.
I had forgotten about that because Sam Bradford got 50 guaranteed. Like, it would have been interesting that if Cam had been Cam in that year before, would they have taken Sam Bradford over him? Because keep in mind, Cam Newton was only the number one pick because Andrew Luck did not come out that year. And to be fair, I'd have taken Andrew Luck number one, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's reasonable to take Andrew Luck in that spot. It's hard for me to go back and unremember what Sam Bradford was in the NFL and remember how highly touted he was coming out of college. Because right now, I think, obviously, you go with Cam Newton. And it's easy for me to say, yeah, Andrew Luck, because we saw what Andrew Luck was when he was healthy and when he was playing. But it seems obvious that you go with Cam Newton, but I guess Sam Bradford was out there in Oklahoma cooking in them baggy sleeves.
Yeah, but the other thing about Sam Bradford was, though, he is the first spread quarterback to get that number one overall pick, right? Like, I think he kind of helped make it easier for Cam, but also Cam was in the same draft with Jake Locker and Christian Ponder and Blaine Gabbert, and they were trying to convince us that they was the same. You remember that?
I remember that Sports Illustrated cover where they had a bunch of faces next to his that didn't deserve to be there.
But you know what that cover looked like to me? That cover was the Cam won't sit down with us cover.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at that, that's like the stock footage from the combine. It looked like that cover of that Tyrann Mathieu story they did that time when they were trying to go down and get the deets on him but couldn't get anybody to talk to him. And so they just had to put an old Tyrann Mathieu picture in front of a green screen, basically, and figure out a way to make it work. Like, that's my only thing. But they were like, the toughest decision. This conversation ain't hard for nobody.
But I remember people pretending like it was hard. I don't remember thinking it was hard. But, I mean, you saw what he did at Auburn. Like, that was not a team that deserved to be the national champs outside of Cam Newton being there. And they were. I mean, the same thing happened when he got to Carolina. Yeah. They just got better immediately.
You don't win no national champion with pips unless you Cam Newton. Like it was pips. Everywhere he looked, Pip here, Pip there, Pip everywhere. Drag them dudes to a national with a bad coach, right? Like, it wasn't like Nick Saban, Cam Newton, and some Pips. There were no Barry Gordy there.
Coach was the Pip. It was all Pips. Got a Pip with the headset on, too.
He made so many people rich. He made Gus Malzahn rich. He made Gene Chizik rich. I guess he kind of helped make Nick Fairley rich. I don't know. Actually, I think that may have been everybody. I don't think none of the players got rich as a result, because unfortunately for them, the only way to get rich as a football player is actually being good.
Or getting in the first round. Didn't he get? He got Fairley in the first round, didn't he?
Yeah, Fairley.
He was good.
He was good. Like, that was it. But everybody else, you go up and down that roster, you think we exaggerating. It's a bunch of dudes you ain't never heard of. Like that's not, that doesn't happen. College football teams that win national championships have a bunch of NFL players on them.
Normally, especially now in this day and age. I don't know how we got here.
Yeah, now people think like that Vince Young Texas team was like Vince and the Pips, and that's insane. They had...
outrageous.
Yeah, they were outrageously deep. Like, at just about every position, they were outrageously deep. Jamal Charles was the number 3 running back. The number 4 running back was Henry Melton, who became an all-pro defensive end. And yes, he was playing running back at 270 pounds.
Lord have mercy.
The nickelback on that team won the Thorpe Award the next year, Aaron Ross.
He was a first-round pick, too.
He was a first-round pick. But to put it in perspective, that secondary on that Texas team had more NFL players than the entire Auburn roster, Cam Newton and Nick Fairley included.
Oh, man. I know that, like, the NIL and all that stuff is happening now. I want retroactive NIL or retroactive compensation for certain players. Not NIL, but that's outside of it. I want the schools. Like, after, you need to come up off something. Because Auburn has one bright spot in anyone's recent memory, and that was the Cam Newton era.
How about this? Texas A&M is doing everything they're doing right now on the back of Johnny Manziel. Right? Not that he was the only good player on that team, because I think that offense had 5 first-round picks in sum total. Well, Evans, and then they had 3 first-round picks on the offensive line. 3. Ooh. Now, none of them turned out to be that good. Like, Jake Matthews is pretty good, but, like, Jokel was a bust, and Ogboihe is just an NFL player. But still, 5, and Christian Michael at running back. But all of this is on the back of Johnny Manziel. Like, the relevance of Texas A&M under those circumstances is on the back of Johnny Manziel, period. Like, he should have made $1 zillion, and now they throwing them zillions around in every way they can to be good at football, because you better be good at something if I'm going to be living in College Damn Station.
I've never been down there. I have no desire, and I don't think I'll ever go down there, but I don't quite get, like, the whole military thing.
Nobody does.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Nobody understands them but themselves. Like, that's the thing about A&M. Nobody gets them but them.
Well, I guess that works for them.
And they know that. They know that. They know that. They know that. But who you got, though? You got Bills or the Chiefs?
I got the Chiefs.
I feel like the Chiefs don't get any credit for being a team that has gone to, like, back-to-back Super Bowls, has won the division 6 straight times, 3 straight trips to the AFC championship game, and that's going into these playoffs?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And the one Super Bowl that they didn't go to under the Patrick Mahomes era was that offsides penalty that didn't affect the play that brought back an interception that Tom Brady threw. So, like, they've been the best team in the AFC for the last several years. This year, they still have been really good, but they weren't as great as we're used to. So I think people have lost confidence in them. But also, to be fair to the Bills, their defense and their secondary, their defensive numbers are incredible. Like, that combine that with an offense, with a quarterback that can take your offense to the heights that we saw last week. Like, I understand why people would pick the Bills. And they're motivated. Like, not that the Chiefs aren't motivated, but it's something about coming in there and trying to knock off Big Brother, because that's who the Chiefs are in the AFC right now.
Yeah, like, I think that this could go either way. Like, I lean toward the Chiefs, like, they got the game at home, all of that stuff. I think what happened with the Chiefs is something that could happen to us with the NFL, just because there's so much stuff that's going on and we can't keep track of everything. But there was a point where people looked up and the Chiefs were under 500 and the Chiefs were in last place in their division and their defense looked absolutely terrible. Like, they looked like the 2000 Rams. Except, what if the 2000 Rams weren't still putting up a zillion points, right? And then the Chiefs made a couple changes on defense. They moved Chris Jones inside. And then they basically did the thing where you could just walk up to a stranger on the street and show them the depth chart with pictures and say, who you think we need to bench? And they was like, is that a white dude in the secondary?
Yeah.
That's probably where I would start.
Let's slide him down in the box.
And it worked.
Down in the mix.
And it worked. It's so uncomfortable. It's so terribly uncomfortable. But the Sorensen dude, who I think we've talked about this year, it's so amazing that he was just a dude in the secondary, totally unremarkable while also being white. Like, they didn't try to overrate him. Nobody ever tried to underrate him. He was just out there, but then he was out there stinking. And they was just like, yo, man, we gotta, like, not just a white dude from BYU. They're like, yo, we gotta change this. And then they changed it and had the best defense in the league for the rest of the year.
Yeah, they've been trying to not get rid of him, but move him out of the secondary. So when they drafted Juan Thornhill, Sorensen wasn't getting no burn. Thornhill got hurt. Sorensen went back in the lineup. And then in the playoffs, he had some very, very big pivotal type plays. They weren't like great athletic coverage plays, but they were pivotal plays in their Super Bowl winning run, which I think also earned him some cachet and respect. And Thornhill took longer than expected to come back from his knee injury, and then they're still winning, and Sorensen's still out there. And then this season happened, and they was like, nah. Hey, Juan, we're going to need you back up in there, Juan. And they find some way, because they haven't completely taken Sorensen off of the field. They find ways to use him and put him out there. But it's interesting because he's not – Tyrann Mathieu is the coach on the field guy. Tyrann Mathieu is the heart of the defense guy. I mean, that's – you know, the fire of the defense is like Chris Jones. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what Sorensen is bringing, but he is bringing something. He ain't getting people lined up, but he's bringing something to keep them out there.
Yo, the thing to me is I hear you say that he's the coach, like Tyrann Mathieu is the coach on the field. And I think about that in the same way as like Ed Reed as coach of the field on the field. And what's wild about that to me is I just don't know how those guys can explain that stuff to anybody.
Yeah, but Tyrann Mathieu isn't like Ed Reed in that way. Tyrann Mathieu, they create defenses that put Tyrann Mathieu in different places. The things that he does that are like unique and special is just like his knack for the ball, like punching it out and catching in weird angles and that sort of stuff. Whereas Ed Reed will run a defense that has never been run before in the middle of a game. That's entirely different. And in his mind, I told you this before, it's like when I first got to Baltimore, like I struggled in part because I didn't know what the hell I was supposed to be doing because I would watch stuff and then it didn't pan out that way. So then I would just start watching film with Ed once a week, all the time. We watch, and then I would see the stuff that he was seeing. So I could anticipate when he was going to go rogue. It wasn't just like a feel, like people want to say, he's instinctual, which like takes the intellect out of it. It wasn't that. It was studied. It was smart. And I'm sure some of it was like instinct. But also he was like, well, when they do this, if they see me do that, then I know they're going to do this. And I know that it's like a second level. So if you get a first level quarterback, like we're looking at Brady Quinn, he's like, all right, if Brady does this, I know I have to do that. And then we look at somebody else like Carson Palmer. If Carson does this, then I'm going to do that. He's going to see me do that. He's going to do this, so I'm going to do that. And then I got an interception. We go to Peyton Manning. It's like, this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that. Then I'm going to get an interception. I don't know if any of that made sense, but that was the genius of Ed. Was like he was a step ahead of everyone else mentally. And I don't see that when I watch Tyrann. Their defenses have him in a position where he is free to go places. It's not like Ed is a half player who picks off a slant in a playoff game against the Dolphins, which actually happened. Deep half, cover two. He's like, nah. They're in 2x2 on a third down, quarterback under center. They gave us a hard count, so we rolled out of our disguise into cover two. I know what's happening. I'm jumping this. And he's right.
Man, I'm looking forward to that game. We also got Packers and the 49ers. And man, we just all have to just get this out the way now. These games ain't no referenda on no Jimmy Garoppolo. That dude ain't good. That dude can put up good numbers. He is not actually good. Like every time somebody tries to tell you how good Jimmy Garoppolo is, I'm like, you're saying this in spite of what you see.
I disagree with you.
Really?
These games are a referendum on Jimmy Garoppolo. Last week's game, he stinks.
But that's what I'm saying. I feel like it's settled. Like, I don't feel like there's anything left to discuss.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, oh, that interception, man. And it's not even the interception. Well, yeah, that was the worst one. But the misses, and thus reminiscent of the misses in the Super Bowl that cost them the game. Like, he could have put them away if he hit a wide open Brandon Ayuk on a play that I predicted on this podcast a week ago. He ran the exact play I told y'all that the Shanahans love to run in these situations, and Jimmy couldn't connect on it. And that's like, I honestly think that probably burns offensive-minded coach more than even the turnovers. Cause like, man, I did that.
That's what I was about to say. Do you see what I did?
All you gotta do is don't blow it. And you blew it again. That guy must drive Kyle Shanahan crazy, man.
Dude, the thing with Garoppolo is you'll go back and look at the stats and his completion percentage will be sky high. It's just he does not throw run-of-the-mill incompletions. Every day incompletions. When he doesn't complete the pass, it's a disaster.
Oh, my
Something has gone colossally wrong, or he has closed his eyes before he has thrown the ball. And I get going to be that guy for a second. What guy? That guy. But a guy that you can relate to. I think that the average person can relate to the idea and hope every day themselves to perform above the level of their own mediocrity. And if they perform over their level of mediocrity, then they themselves are not mediocre. And so you see Jimmy Garoppolo, who is obviously mediocre, but can put up results that are greater than mediocre, and as you would wish to be treated as better than mediocre, in spite of your mediocrity, they pay it forward to Jimmy Garoppolo. Because it's like, well, Kirk Cousins is kind of in the same place where, you know, he's gotten better. He's gotten much better. But he's still Kirk Cousins. And so you can look at the numbers and everything else, but you know what sorry look like. And Kirk Cousins at his worst is sorry. Jimmy Garoppolo goes to sorry places. Like, even when Mahomes or Lamar Jackson are playing badly, they don't look sorry. It's like, yo, what are you doing? But they don't look sorry. Josh Allen, unfortunately, when it goes bad for him, he can look sorry, but he looks so good the rest of the time that it's like, okay, we'll let this slide. But Garoppolo, he be doing things. He be like, yo, man, he's sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot like Baker Mayfield in that if you're going to give me the low lows, sometimes you got to give me the Josh Allen highs too. And those guys, it's like they can give you mediocre pretty regularly, and then they can give you deep troughs and they can give you slight peaks. Mm-hmm. And that's not a trade-off that I'm interested in having. That's a losing ordeal. And then at the end of the day, it all kind of balances itself out to be like around slightly above average. And you feel okay about that. And the scary part is you can win like that. Like, you can win like that, but it don't feel good. I just imagine what Kyle Shanahan must say to his wife or say about Jimmy in private moments. Because it just reminds me of like putting together a puzzle with my 5-year-old. I done did all this. It's like 5 pieces left. And they obvious pieces too. Just put them in the right spot. Just go ahead and put them in the right spot. Like, I done did it. and then it's even more accurate because, and then once we finally get it all done, if we happen to get this playoff win, AKA put the puzzle together, and someone else walks in the room, they say, wow, Emmy, you did such a great job. And that's what we doing to Jimmy. Wow, Jimmy, you did such a great job. And Kyle sitting at home like, if your mother, you see all of this that I had to do?
Man, let me look this up now. I don't know what the weather looking like in Green Bay for game day. I honestly don't even know when.
17 degrees, I think. It's an 8 p.m. game.
It's an 8 p.m. game. What day they play it?
Saturday.
Okay, high of 20, low of 1.
Yep.
A degree, Dominique. A degree. 16-mile-an-hour winds. Okay. All I'm saying is 49ers might run the wishbone. One thing we have seen is that if Kyle Shanahan absolutely has to just not throw the ball no more, he will stop throwing the ball. right? Like if it's like if he does not have trust in Garoppolo, he will just stop throwing the ball. They are going to stop throwing the ball. If they get any kind of lead, they gonna stop throwing the ball. If they down by 7, they gonna stop throwing the ball. If they down by 14, Deebo Samuel might throw the ball. But Jimmy Garoppolo, they gonna do everything possible not to let him mess this thing up.
Deebo got an arm too. I think he threw a ball in like week 16, maybe. He threw one, completed it. I think he's 1 for 2 on his career for some reason. I was looking at all Deebo's plays throughout the course of the year because, man, he is something special out there. He's like a natural, for real running back. And also, he like wins jump balls. Like, he's one of those guys that falls in the category of Pop Warner.
Yes.
Where he's like, you go out there and you're like, because you know when you're in elementary school, you're in middle school, maybe even high school for some people, there's one dude. He that dude. He the best baseball player. He's the best pitcher. He's the best hitter. He's the best quarterback. He's the best running back. He's the best linebacker. He hoop better than all of y'all. And it feels like Deebo is that dude, where it's like, he's just better than everybody and everything. Odell Beckham's another guy that's just like,
yeah,
nah. He probably a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield if he put his mind to it.
What if Cordell Patterson had come in the league like 6 years later?
Oh.
Or like Percy Harvin. Like, I feel like we're at a place in the league now where like the all-purpose backs on the Rivals 24/7 recruiting pages, they've now figured out, or some guys have figured out how to use those guys like in an NFL context. Andy Reid is a guy that would figure out what to do with that. Where he's like, he's kind of like a running back. Fine. Then put him out there and call running back plays for him. You don't even have to be a great route runner. Like with Shanahan's got like the Juszczyk, George Kittle, these guys. They're all, like, when you really think about it, like, very similar types of players.
What they do that's really interesting and difficult for a defense is they have everybody on the offense, they only have to learn 3 to 5 things. And then they have these 3 players who can do 50 things. And so he, like, puts the learning and the challenges on those guys that can carry it. So it makes the offense easier for them. But then it requires the entire defense to understand what these 3 guys are going to be doing. So, like, there's so much more onus on the defense to be mentally prepared for a game than it puts on its own offense. Because, and I'm someone who thinks that Kyle Shanahan is not as good a head coach as he is an offensive coordinator, but him getting all the power in San Francisco allows him also to influence John Lynch on the type of players that he wants. Because you don't remember Deebo Samuel coming out the draft like, let's all get a Deebo Samuel. It's because his tweenerness was something that was a drawback. And Tyrann Mathieu's another guy like that. We're just moving in that positionless kind of direction, the same way basketball is. Football is moving in that way, too, where you want players that are versatile.
Yeah, I'd also like to make this note. Like, nicknaming your small child Deebo was bad parenting, man. Like that's right up there when you see some kid tearing up the Shoney's wearing a Boys Will Be Boys shirt. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you encourage it.
Yeah, you encourage it, the wrong kind of behavior. Like, it sounds like Deebo took a proper perspective on the matter. And, like, maybe his dad is actually, like, for real Deebo Senior. And was like, oh, it's cute you Deebo-ing like that, but you ain't about to be Deebo for real. But, yeah, like, we are not. If I'm, like, your third grade teacher and you, like, call me Deebo, I will not.
How much do you think Deebo would have turned into Deebo if his nickname wasn't Deebo? How much impact do you think being called Deebo and expected to behave in a Deebo fashion had on shaping him to the man that he is today? In that case, it's worth the risk. It's worth the risk.
That's a great question. That's what I'm saying. But the other end of Deebo is he turns out like actual Deebo.
I mean, you're rolling the dice, baby.
Deebo is such a legendary character who barely even had to say a word. Like, everything about Deebo as a character that works is what everybody else is doing with Deebo, right? Like, you know, he was Zeus back in the day, right? You remember when he was Zeus?
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, in that Hulk Hogan wrestling movie.
Yeah.
I remember.
And his name in L.A. was Tiny.
Yep. Tiny Lester.
You listen to old Robin Harris routines, and you hear him talk about Tiny from the stage.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's the same Tiny, right? I mean, it's Robin Harris doing shows in L.A. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the same Tiny. I'm glad, by the way, that you mentioned Odell Beckham. Remember they tried to tell us he was sorry? Remember that? It wasn't that long ago. And to be fair, he might not even be the best wide receiver on his team right now, but not because of slight to Odell Beckham, but because Cooper Kupp has decided to put the nation on his back, right? repping for all y'all.
He is not receiving the requisite hype. Like, I feel like a white man doing something that black men traditionally do and, like, doing it better than everyone else, Like, he's not getting full Great White hype treatment. I don't understand why.
Dog, and I keep telling y'all, you have to remove black people from the equation in order for y'all to fully appreciate white athleticism. Cooper Kupp from somewhere where they didn't have no cotton. You know what I'm saying? And you could not ignore his fast. You could not discount it. He was just the fastest guy at the school. And so you put him at wide receiver. Then he goes to Eastern Washington. And I'm sure they go try to get some black people, but they got to take what they can get. You know what I'm saying? And so all these super fast white dudes, Jordy Nelson, right? Like, you can go up and down that line. Ain't none of them grow up and go to no school with no brothers at it. It didn't happen that way, because then they might be playing lacrosse.
Yeah, these are not from agricultural places. They could not grow no sugar cane, no cotton.
Or they just couldn't
nothing.
Take us that far, you know? Yeah. Like, but like, even Don Beebe went to North Dakota State or something like that. Like, I'm just saying. So Cooper Kupp is in L.A. In L.A.
They're going to make a movie about him.
Yeah, but Odell, what you said about Odell, I've said this for the longest. I'm fascinated by Odell. Like, he ain't even really my type of dude, because I'm of a different generation in every way I can possibly think of. But I recognize very early about him, he's good at everything, and that scares the hell out of people. They do not know what to do with the fact that he is good at everything. When I saw him throw that pass, I was like, I don't even know if he played quarterback in high school. He's just good at throwing a football.
Tim DeWight from yes. Iowa City.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you made this point before, too, is like, a lot of the Odell hate is really just jealousy. This guy's, they like, man, he better than me, handsomer than me, cooler than me, faster than me, stronger than me. Like, and he knows it and doesn't like pretend, doesn't give you the false humility about it. It makes people uncomfortable who don't have like whatever personal self-esteem that's needed to protect yourself from that insecurity. But yeah, he'd be doing 360s on a basketball court. Like, dude, he's just a special athlete. When that man was catching kickoffs one-handed in college, impossible.
Dominique, they tried to tell us he was sorry.
Yeah, they did.
They just like a month and a half ago tried to tell us that Odell Beckham was sorry.
That speaks to the interconnectedness of like sports stats, because there were numbers out there that people were pulling that were legitimate numbers that like the offense changed when he was on the field and when he was off the field. And that might make you believe that he was bad for the offense, but that's not true. He was fine. The guy who was hurt in the offense was not the most talented dude on their team. Or second most talented. I'm sorry. My apologies to Myles Garrett.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, yeah. That's the Browns. Dude, the Browns got dudes and they still can't get good.
So many dudes. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was my favorite linebacker coming out of the draft this year. Micah Parsons is better than him. But just as we were talking about the versatility that you have to have in modern football, like, he was somebody that I felt was good enough, athletic enough to cover a slot receiver from time to time, and physical enough to make plays in a run game. And they got him. He's outstanding to add to a bunch of other, like, John Johnson, maybe the best safety in the league, Denzel Ward, a top 10 corner in the league, and then they got Clowney opposite Garrett, and that's not even getting over to their offensive line that might be the best in the league. I'm sorry, I'm saying stuff, all this stuff that people know, but that team was loaded. The only person that did their job down there was Andrew Berry. The GM did his damn thing. The rest of y'all fools.
And it don't even matter. It'll never matter. It'll never matter. By the way, before we go, what's the other play? Yeah, we talked about them. Where are you on my man Joey Burrow?
I'm a big Joey guy. I love Joey. He makes me happy. He gives all the enjoyment. The post game press conference. He's got the proper. He pulls off the swag. I know you saw those pictures.
Yeah.
Post game pictures. I thoroughly enjoyed it. He can play, and he's not super physically gifted, but I'm on board the Joey train. He gonna lose though, because that offensive line ain't gonna be able to hold up. But that ain't on him.
Now, he a real one, man, and it's still. I don't think I talked about it on here, but I've talked about this. It's so wild to think that, like, he had to transfer because he couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins. And here's what the irony of it is. I started looking up them high school clips of Dwayne Haskins, and I was like, oh, yeah, I would have made the same decision. Why? Because Dwayne Haskins was big and strong and looked great dropping back. Meanwhile, Joe Burrow out here scurrying about, figuring out how to get it done. And what do you know? You flip it up, And Dwayne Haskins is never going to start another NFL game. And Joe Burrow, if he stays healthy, probably going to be playing for 15 years and get his jersey retired up there. And he getting to throw to Ja'Marr Chase.
This is another situation where, like, context matters so much. And we assume, because they play games with fair rules, that the best person prevails or the most talented person prevails. That is not the case. There's lots of people at home right now that could ball, but the situation, you know, all that stuff, my coach don't like me. I don't think that's the reason necessarily. I don't think that's the reason necessarily, but there's a couple of them guys where the situation wasn't right. Joe Burrow's not the only person who had to sit behind a more talented quarterback, more physically gifted quarterback, and not get a chance. Normally it's a black dude. That's what's so shocking about the Joe Burrow situation. But the last thing on that is, like, even the way that the game has changed, I noticed that too, is like how I'm talking about you need these versatile guys. And we've talked about this before, that, like, the guys who would have played safety before are now linebackers. And the guys who would play linebacker before are now defensive ends, or there is no place for them in the league. Like, that is fascinating to me, and the amount of time that it takes to evolve. Like, you could grow up watching football, modeling your game after a specific player. By the time you get to college, you could be the identical duplicate of that player, and the game has evolved to a point where you are no longer useful. You better learn how to sling shoes.
Right. It's like, yo, I want to be just like Ray Lewis. Oh, nope. So you want to be a broadcaster?
Exactly. There ain't no room for him in the game no more. It just ain't.
I tell you this, I feel bad for all them big old obese dudes who decided they wanted to be the next Ted Washington. It's like, nah, you just out here fat for no reason now.
Yeah. Gilbert Brown is not in the league. Like, if you're going to be big, you better be Vita Vea, who is incredibly athletic.
Like, I didn't realize this. That dude Jordan Davis only played 25% of the snaps at Georgia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How can you play 70% of the snaps at 360 pounds?
Yeah. Nah, I enjoy the Jordan Davis experience, but I'm not drafting Jordan Davis if I'm an NFL team. I'm just not doing it. I mean, he may be one to survive an impact, but I don't want that.
Vita Vea, them high school running back clips, look them up. If you haven't seen them, then just imagine how terrorized you would be.
I don't have to. I could just think back to Haloti Ngata. I'm sorry. I know you got to wrap it up, but that's a whole nother ball of wax. We've tiptoed around. We ain't got in the nitty gritty of that.
Can we tell the Haloti Ngata story again? Your best Haloti Ngata story?
Oh, yeah. So we used to, when I played for the Ravens on Saturdays, we have all the family come in for the practice before the game. Then we just hang out on the field. So I remember one of the first times it happened, Haloti's wife, who was a college volleyball player, and the kids at that time, he had a couple of boys, maybe three boys, and they came in and they were playing on the field, running around. And so I went over and was like introducing myself. It's my first week there to his family and whatever, saying hi to the kids. And the kids, one of them was really big and just was like not very communicative. And I remember saying to my wife afterwards, like, man, Haloti's real good dude. It's nice that like he had a big contract and like he can probably get the best services for his son. Cause like I assume that his son had a disability. And then I asked his son how old he was. And he was like 5. I thought that boy was 12 and could barely talk. And then I was like, oh. Yeah, his Haloti's wife is like 6'3". She's and them kids. And they were like coordinated too, was the thing that blew my mind. Cause you know, even if it's a big 5-year-old, like they've fallen around and stuff, like, no, his kids was out there moving, looking and moving like a 12-year-old. And I was like, yeah, he got all the best services. No, he don't need no services. I need the services.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out with me and Howard Bryant back on the record with Bob Costas on HBO Friday, January 21st, 11 o'clock Eastern. It also replays, so be sure to check that out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Watch us on YouTube. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.